good to be back with you. Had a good meeting up in Russellville, and I'm going to jump right into the lesson because got a lot to cover, but we're going to continue our series this morning, both services, talking about spirituality. And in this series, we're focusing really more on things that will build and strengthen our relationship with God. But in this first period, we're going to talk about something that drains us and saps our energy. You know, we're getting into the dog days of summer, where if you go out there in the middle of the day and you stand out there or work out there in the middle of the hot sun beating down on you, you may not even be working and you're just going to wear down. The sun can just sap your energy. Well, we're going to talk about something that can drain us in a similar way, spiritually speaking. In the parable of the sower, Jesus says that the seed that was planted among the thorns got choked by the cares of this world, and it was unable to bear fruit. Well, materialism, perhaps more than anything else in our life, will keep us from bearing fruit and growing as we should spiritually. And this is a particular problem in America. This is not going to be the last lesson you hear from me this year on materialism. It's a theme that we have to come back to again and again. And we know it. We recognize it. We understand we're living in a land of plenty. We understand that there are a lot of distractions out there. And yet we constantly have to remind ourselves and keep reevaluating our own heart to see if those thorns have crept in, if materialism has caused us to degress and not be what God wants us to be. We are talking about true spirituality, how it is a spiritual vision, direction, and devotion for God, faith, hope, and love. And materialism drains all three of these things. We're going to talk about that in our lesson this morning. We're going to look at two wealthy men this morning. And these are two men that contrast one another in the way that they looked at the material things. Both of them had great flocks and herds. Both of them were very wealthy. But one had his eyes set on a city which has foundations. The other, a very different kind of city. A city that did not have a good foundation. And we're going to contrast them and talk about what we can learn from each. We're going to talk about Abraham and Lot. And so let's begin reading here in Genesis chapter 13, beginning in verse 1. So Abram went up from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the Negev. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. And he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the first. And there Abram called upon the name of the Lord. And Lot, who went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. Then Abram said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if you take the right hand, then I will go to the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. Lot is an interesting character study. No less than three times in 2 Peter chapter 2, he is called, identified by the Spirit of God as a righteous man. And yet when we read the story of Lot and evaluate his life, we do not see, or at least many of us don't see, very much righteousness. But what that tells us about Scripture is that not everything is black and white. Not everything is clear cut. There are a lot of people in the Scriptures that it's hard to really categorize them in one direction or the other. And that's because these characters are not just flannel board, you know, two-dimensional people where it's so simple. And that's the way we are. I think there was a part of Lot that cared very much about the Lord and was truly concerned about spiritual things, was righteous. I mean, he began this journey with Abram. Abraham went out from his home not knowing where he was going. I would suggest to you that Lot didn't know where he was going either. He began as a pilgrim, as a sojourner. He was living in tents, dwelling in the land of promise, just like Abraham was. And yet, just like us, though we have set our sights on heaven, though we have determined our course, we have made the confession, we have resolved that we're going to follow the Lord and the Lord only, Lot allowed materialism to take hold of his heart. And we're going to talk about Lot and what we can learn about how materialism saps us spiritually, draining us. We said that faith is spiritual sight. We walk by faith, not by sight. Well, materialism is based on physical sight. It is based on what the eye sees. And I would suggest to you that the eye cannot always be trusted. The devil is very good at confusing us in what we see physically. Let me give you some examples of how our physical sight can deceive us. Is this top hat longer or wider or taller? Well, to me it looks taller, but it's actually the same both vertically and horizontally. What about these two curves here? Which one is larger? Well, to my eyes, it looks like the bottom one is larger, but they're actually the same size. And what about these two lines? Which is longer? Again, they're identical, but your eyes deceived you. And so what is crooked or bent is actually straight. What looks curvy is not that way at all. And the devil is very good at taking, you know, something like this that curves around and it looks like it's a circle like or a pinwheel going inside. These are actually concentric circles. The devil is good at deceiving us and making us think we see something that is not. And causing our eyes to be deceived into going after something that we shouldn't desire. That was what he did in the garden with Eve. He deceived Eve, making her believe that something she knew originally was bad for her that would take her life, believing that that was actually something that was good for her. He deceived her eyes, her physical sight. And that's what materialism is. It is based on physical sight so that we do not see things perhaps as they really are. And I believe that's what happened a lot here. It's not that Lot did not recognize the danger of Sodom. There in 2 Peter 2, where he's called a righteous man three times, it says that his righteous soul was vexed when he saw and heard the evil that was in that city. His righteous soul could see, his spiritual vision could see through all the material trappings of Sodom to see that it was a bad thing. In fact, I believe that's why he pitched his tent towards Sodom, not in Sodom. I think he knew the dangers that were in Sodom, and so he didn't want to be too close to it, but close enough that he could still enjoy the benefits of it. And it says here in verse 10 that Lot lifted his eyes, his physical eyes, I might add. He lifted up his eyes and saw the Jordan Valley, that it was well watered everywhere like the garden of the Lord, and that's what drew him to this. The devil was able to deceive his eyes. Abraham, on the other hand, looked at things in a very different way. We're told in Hebrews 11 and verse 1, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. At least not seen with the physical eye. If you have the eye of faith, you can see what really matters. You can see beyond the facade, the deception that the devil puts before your eyes, because you see what things really are. In verse 3, it says, by faith we understand that the universe was created by the Word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things that are visible. Look around us. Everything that you see in creation, do you realize that God just spoke it into existence? It did not exist eternally. In fact, scientifically, I believe you can prove that matter is not eternal. What God did is He spoke it into existence. What is seen was created out of things that are not visible, and we know that by the eyes of faith. Noah, in Hebrews 11, verse 7, says, "By faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen." He came home one day to Mrs. Lot, and he said, "I'm going to build a boat." And not just an ordinary boat, 450 feet long. I mean, he worked on that thing for a long time, cutting down trees, gathering bitumen, mortar, all the things that he needed, working his sons to death. And for what? Something that he could not even see. But he knew it was coming because he had the eyes of faith. And so we come to Abraham. And it says in Hebrews 11, verse 8, "By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going." Comes home to Sarah. "We're going to pack everything up and go." She says, "Where are we going?" And he says, "I have no idea." He wasn't given a map. He wasn't given a GPS. You know, there was nothing that God gave him saying, "This is where you're going to go. This is how long it's going to take." And this is nothing like that was given. Why did he go? Why did he go to a place that he couldn't even see? Because he was pursuing it by faith. "By faith, he went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, whose designer and builder is God." A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the reason why people would build tent or live in tents years ago. Because they were building their home. They were building their new life. And they were not content living in a tent because it was, you know, not very accommodative. It leaked when it rained. It would blow over easily by the wind. And so they would labor and strain and work so hard to build that house, that firm house that would stand through the weather, that would keep them out of the cold, that would keep them out of the rain. But Abraham never got to enjoy that luxury. For the rest of his days, when he left his home, his house, his family, everything that he knew, everything that by his sight would tell him, "You need to stay right here. This is just a dream. This is not going to happen." Everything that the devil presented for him in his homeland, he left. And he walked by faith, not by sight, lived in this land as in a foreign land, dwelling in a tent for the rest of his days. Why? Because of what he could see. Not physically, but spiritually. He was looking forward to the city which has foundations. And so these all died in faith. Verse 13, "not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar." They saw them, and that's why they followed them. And so you and I need to learn something from this. We need to be careful that we don't allow our physical sight to draw our attention away from what really matters. And what really matters is not that house that we're living in. That's gonna decay. It's going to fall apart. Those of you that have lived in your house for very long know that that is true. These houses, they wear out, they wear down. The plumbing leaks, the toilet leaks. You know, the roof has to be constantly remanufactured. We have to keep up this place because it's wearing away. And even if it doesn't wear away in our lifetime, we're going to die and we can't take it with us. So what do we need to be doing? We need to be seeking something more substantial than this. Something that really matters. Something that's going to last. A city which has foundations that we don't build, that we don't design, that God has built for us. That's what we need to be doing. Just like Abraham. And I would suggest to you that we heed the admonition at the end of this great chapter. This great chapter of the heroes of faith who walked by faith like Abraham all their lives, sacrificing so much to follow God who made promises to them. And we're told in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. If we can keep our eyes on Jesus, all this other distraction is not going to fool us. The devil will throw up all kinds of things that will look good, that will look promising, that will look rewarding, that will look pleasurable, that will look like it will satisfy us. But we need to see those things for what they are. They are not real. It's all a facade. It's all a lie. It will not satisfy us. It will not give us what we need. We need to keep our eyes with a laser-like focus on Jesus. He is our reward. He is the only one who can give us what we need. We need to keep our eyes on Jesus. But the other thing we see about materialism is that it slowly and gradually, and perhaps imperceptibly, without us even knowing it, enslaves our heart. Look back at Hebrews chapter 13. We mentioned in verse 12, that while Abram settled in Canaan, Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Your translation may say he pitched his tent even as far as Sodom or toward Sodom. It doesn't say that he lived in Sodom. Again, 2 Peter 2, he knew what was in Sodom and he knew it wasn't a good thing, either for him, for his wife, or for his daughters. And so he tried to get as close as he could to Sodom without actually being in Sodom. But that soon changed. In chapter 14, we read about some kings that come and defeat the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah. And when we come to Lot in verse 14 or verse 12, it says, they also took Lot, the son of Abram's brother, who was dwelling, notice, in Sodom. Not towards Sodom, but in Sodom, and his possessions, and went their way. All right, so now he's moved from living outside of Sodom to in Sodom. Look at chapter 19. When God determines he's going to destroy Sodom and sends those angels to warn Lot about it. It says the two angels, verse 1, came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting where? In the gate of Sodom. Now, who sat in the gate? The elders sat in the gate. So he's not only in Sodom, he's integrated into the life of Sodom. In fact, he will be criticized by those men who want to abuse those angels as saying, this man has made himself a judge over us, indicating that he somehow has become a part of the city government, being a judge who sits in the gate of the city. And then when the angels warn him to get out of Dodge, look at what happens. In verse 14, so Lot went out and said to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters, up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city. But he seemed to his sons-in-law to be jesting. As morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city. But he lingered. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. And as they brought them out, one said, escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away. Get away from this city, he's telling them. And Lot said to them, listen to this, oh no, my lords. Now he was leaving Sodom, but he didn't want to go to the hills. Why? He says, oh no, my lords, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have shown me great kindness in saving my life, but I cannot escape to the hills. Why, Lot? I cannot escape to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me and I die. Behold, this city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. What difference does that make? It is a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved. He said to them, behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have been, which you have spoken. Escape there quickly, for I can do nothing till you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the city was called Zoar. And we know the rest of the story. Lot's wife looks back. And I would suggest to you that she looked back for the same reason that Lot lingered. And that was, their heart was still in Sodom. As much as Lot despised Sodom and loathed the things that were going on in Sodom, even though he felt like a stranger there living in that city, there was a part of him that was attached to Sodom. There was a part of him that did not want to leave, that had, when he lingered, he had to be dragged out of Sodom by the angels. And when taken out of Sodom, he can no longer live in the hills, living in a tent like Abraham, like he did for all those years. Why? Because he needs a city to live in. Now, a little city, he's kind of making a compromise here. I'm not going to live in a big city anymore where there's all this wickedness. I'm going to live in a little city. Let me live there. And of course, that didn't work out either. He ends up in a cave with his two daughters. But I would suggest to you that what has happened a lot is he has come to need a city. It's where he feels safe. You hear that in his pleading with the angels? It's where he feels safe and secure. So while Abraham has no locks on his tent, you can't lock up a tent. Lot needs doors. He needs protection. He needs a city where he feels safe and secure. He's no longer trusting in the Lord. He's depending on the things of man to provide his protection and his safety. And that is very much like you and me. I think we all ought to be looking at Lot as if we're looking in a mirror right now. This is very much like we are today. It enslaves us. Again, Abraham went to live in the land of promise as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. These all died in faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. He didn't need stuff to provide either pleasure or a sense of fulfillment or a sense of security. He didn't need all of that because God was going to give him everything if he continued following him. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He prepared for them a city. I want to suggest to you that we all think about this and determine in our heart that we're going to travel light and stay mobile. I tell you what's happened to us is we have become so dependent on stuff that we can't imagine life without it. We feel lost without it. And what happens to us is we get tied down. And I really want to encourage you young people, especially those of you who have not already gotten tied down by this world. Some of us are so wrapped up, we're almost beyond help. I'll offer you a solution at the very end of the lesson, but we'll wait for that. For those of us who are just completely tied down by the things of this world, and if the angels were to come to us, we would kind of linger, or worse yet, be looking back and be almost be forced, kicking and screaming, to leave the things that we need so much or feel like we need so much. But those of you who are younger and have not yet gotten trapped by all of these things, stay light. I know of some young people now that have just decided they're going to rent until they can afford to pay for a house with cash. Now, I will tell you, I have not made that decision. I have just invested myself in a house that I'm going to be spending a long time until I pay it off. All right? But I appreciate what some, and I understand that it may not be wise financial advice to throw away your money at rent, but you know what? It's just money. And at the end of the day, living in an apartment or living in a trailer or living in something that you can pay for with cash, you're not a slave to it. You're not a slave to it. And, of course, we're just talking about a house. What about a car payment? What about all that furniture you buy? What about this education you're trying to get right now and the bills are going up and up and up? How long are you going to be a slave until you're truly like Abraham and you're not tied down to anything? There are a lot of us that we couldn't even imagine quitting the job that we're at, because if we were, we couldn't pay off all this stuff. And so we're really a slave. The borrower is the slave to the lender. And we're tied down, and we know that this thing is sapping us spiritually. We don't have time to pray. We don't have time to read our Bible. We don't even have time to come to church on occasion. But we can't leave it. We can't leave it because we need all this stuff. Travel light. Stay mobile. Don't allow yourself to become Lot, to where when the angels do come calling, you're having second thoughts. Stay light. Stay mobile. But finally, we need to see that materialism begins with a selfish heart. That's the opposite of love. Faith, hope, and love. Love is that spiritual devotion to God. But materialism isn't about God at all. There is nothing about materialism that speaks of God or thinks about God. Materialism is all about me, what I want, what I desire. And that's what we see in Lot. Here at the beginning of the story, it says when Abraham presented to Lot this decision, you go to the left hand or you go to the right and I'll go to the right or vice versa. It says in verse 11, so Lot chose for himself. He wasn't thinking about Abraham. He wasn't thinking about his wife or his daughters, and he certainly wasn't thinking about God when he made that decision. He didn't get down on his knees and pray about this and ask that God show him the best place for him and his family and that he might seek the Lord with all of his heart. He was not thinking about God. He was thinking about himself when he made that decision. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 17, by contrast, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. Abraham wasn't thinking selfishly when he offered up Isaac. He offered up the most precious thing he had, emotionally or considering the promises of God were to come through Isaac. I love what it says of Moses. In Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And that came with lots of privileges, by the way. If he continued to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter, he would sit in that lap of luxury the rest of his life. He'd be living in a city. He'd be sitting behind walls. He wouldn't have anything to worry about. Wouldn't have to worry about hunger. Wouldn't have to worry about anything, as long as he continued to be the son of Pharaoh's daughter. But rather, he chose rather to be mistreated with the people of God than to enjoy the fleeting pleasures of sin. Could his eyes, the eyes of faith, see past all of that? Absolutely. He considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. And so I ask you this morning, what are you seeking? What are you looking for? And if you have gotten to the point to where you just can't imagine leaving that job, or you couldn't imagine downsizing, or selling that car for an old clunker, or whatever it is, whatever has captured your heart, it may not be something that is a physical thing, it may be a hobby that you have that's just sapping all of your time and energy and money. It may be a pursuit that you have, a sport, a career, anything that is of this life, of this world, that's temporal, that's passing away, and you know it intellectually, you realize that, but emotionally, you just can't give it up. You need to think about the story of Lot, because let me tell you what happened to Lot. Lot chose the well-watered valley, but at the end of this story, he had nothing. He didn't have his wife. And in a sense, he lost his daughters as well, living in a cave, fathering his own children, shamefully. And so consider the story of Lot, and consider what happened to Abraham, how God richly blessed him because he walked by faith. Look to the reward. If Jesus were to come in this morning and look you in the eye and say these words to you, what would you do? What if Jesus were to come and say, you lack one thing? Go, sell all that you have, and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. What would be your response? Let's bow and pray. God, We come before you realizing that we are just sojourners in this life. We are not a part of this world. And we understand, at least intellectually, that this world has nothing to offer us. This world has nothing to give. But, Father, it's so easy for us to become consumed, to become trapped by the devil's lies, to be allured by the passing pleasures of sin. Help us, Father, to see beyond these things and to realize that they offer us nothing. Help us to see Christ. Help us to focus on Him, to see things as you see them, to see with the eyes of faith, to see what really matters, what really will give us our reward. And Father, if there is someone this morning that has become consumed by this world, help them to heed what Jesus said to the rich young ruler. Help him to consider the angels dragging Lot out of the city and help them decide that they're not going to let anything keep them from going to heaven. And I pray for these young people that have not yet gotten totally enslaved to this world. Help them to make decisions that will keep them from becoming a prisoner here. Help us to remember that our home is heaven and that our relationship with you is worth more than anything that gold can buy. Thank you so much, Father, for hearing us and loving us and giving us this hope. And it's in Jesus' Son's name that we pray. Amen.